This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of But Why, the podcast that's all about digging into big questions and tricky topics via honest conversations. Before we begin, a quick shout out to Hyde Park Winter Wonderland, who not only provide a great festive day out, which we'll talk about more later, are also today's episode sponsor. This week, I'm going to be looking at solo parenting. While my guest was in her 20s and single, she would often joke that if Mr. Right hadn't come along, that she would take matters into her own hands and have a child on her own. When she found herself still single in her 30s, it stopped being a joke and she started researching sperm banks and fertility clinic. Without any further ado, let me introduce to you author Liv Thorne. As well as being mum to her son Herb and her terrier Elvis, Liv also went to the same school as me. And for all sorts of reasons, we spent a lot of time voice noting one another on Instagram, but have never actually met in real life. So I'm absolutely delighted to have her here with me today. Well, not actually here, because we're both on either side of a screen, but near enough. So let's get cracking with the episode.
Right, I'm going to ask you for the fourth time and try and act natural about it. How are you really?
I'm a average 6 out of 10. I reckon. Herb is starting preschool tomorrow and it's freaking me out much more than I thought it would. Just the thought of him in a little school uniform and me not knowing what he's doing every day, because his child minds are obviously normally just going, oh, we went here, we did this, here's a photo, you know. And suddenly it'll just be like, I'll be trying to pull blood out of a stone going, but what did you do, Herb?
Nothing.
Yeah, it's true. You don't get anything.
No.
You don't get anything. That is very different. It's kind of a notion of them going into the big wide world, even though it's not. It's a very small little world, but it is really definitely a step. And also, God, not to put fuel on the flames, yeah. But once you're in the school system, the 9 to 3 term time, honestly, yeah. Life just gets faster and faster and faster and faster.
I know.
Because you're never.
I'm so aware of that. And I think that's what's terrifying. And also, I gave birth to him half an hour ago.
Yeah.
So I just don't understand it.
My niece is starting school this week, and I did say to my sister, it's a moment when the whole cliche, but with parenting, that the hours are slow but the years are fast, is
unbelievably
true.
I know. I say in my book that cliches are cliches for a reason.
Yeah.
Because they're true. Like, and you feel them all the time.
Yeah, you
just
do.
Every time you think about it and you're like, oh, yeah, that cliche is correct.
Isn't it weird with parenting where you suddenly, I don't know what happens sometimes, but you get a real moment when you see them for who they are as teenagers or as adults. And it can only be momentary, but you're like, oh, wow.
It's coming.
And I really feel that with my boys more so than
I bet you do.
Because I think one day you're going to be men.
Yes.
Like Greta's physicality will change and she will probably become the same as me, but the notion that they'll one day be bigger than me absolutely blows my mind.
No, it's nuts, isn't it?
You'll be a man.
I know. I can't quite, can't get my head around any of that kind of thing.
No. And my other two important questions, which are a complete going back a step, but what star sign are you and what's your favourite biscuit?
Star sign, I am a A1 Taurian. I'm stubborn, I'm greedy, I'm loyal, I'm feisty. Yeah, I am the most typical Taurian of all time.
But Taurus are great. You're great friends to have. I've got some very, very close Taurus in my life. And that wrangle between the fact that when you go, you go, and also when you dig your heels in, you dig your heels in.
Ooh,
but you can be pretty lazy given half a chance.
So lazy, given any chance.
But it's quite it's a confusing combination, isn't it?
Yeah, tell me about it. Live in my head. Yeah, it's really confusing.
But you're quite grounded. Everything.
Really grounded. But there's always a lot of kerfuffle, I think is the word in my head.
Yeah, I mean, that's just life, isn't it? And favourite biscuit. And we've tried to record this several times, and on the last recording you told me that you're a crisps person, and it made me think of when I interviewed Catelyn Moran. She has got a very unique hobby/collection where she photographs every folded over crisp that she's ever eaten.
That's a good, I mean, we should be friends. I love her. That's incredible. That's the kind of people you need in your life, is people that take photo of crisps.
And document it. You are a high profile journalist, very successful author. But your real passion is folded over crisps.
Yeah, no, I get that entirely. Yeah.
Do you want to tell me what your favourite biscuit is? Or you can tell me your favourite crisp, but it's up to you.
I don't have a favourite crisp. That's like asking your favourite child. That's not allowed.
I get that.
It's not acceptable. My favourite biscuit, the first thing that came into my head is a brandy snap, and I honestly don't know why. And I don't think I've had one for 15 years, if not longer. My gran used to make them and put cream in the middle, and it was the greatest joy of all time. So
I would
sticking with brandy snap.
Is that truly a biscuit? That is
probably not.
It's more of a sweet treat, but it's thing is you don't.
Is it acceptable?
Yeah, we'll go with it. We'll go with it mainly because we've been trying to do this podcast for the last half an hour, and we're still in the the very preamble-y bit. So I feel like I really need to crack on with and not dwell on the ins and outs of brandy snaps. So I'm struggling to know where to begin with your story. I'm going to follow the lead of your book, which is to talk chronologically, I suppose, and for a bit of context before we get into the solo parenting, a bit about your childhood and the bit before Herb, if you will.
Yeah, so I had a ace childhood, and until it kind of wasn't particularly. So my mum got breast cancer when I was 8, and actually as a child you don't know any different. So I don't know what being 8 and not having cancer in my life was like. So that doesn't, there's nothing odd to me about that because that was my normality. And then mum got better. And then my my dad got diagnosed with asbestos poisoning. And then he deteriorated really rapidly. It kind of takes on the form of lung cancer. And within a year, he'd died when I was about 12. Well, I was 12. And then just as he died, mum got secondary breast cancer. So from the age of 8 until when mum died when I was 17, there was just illness and kind of death, essentially, in my life. And at the time, I thought it was all fine. Like that, like I said just now, I thought it was, I knew it was a bit abnormal because obviously it wasn't happening to my friends, but it is still all I knew. So I didn't realize until really recently, ridiculously, how much it had affected me. And so by the time I was 17 and orphaned and, you know, just being a normal 17-year-old, going out, getting boozy, trying to make boys love me, you know. And then I just had two really rubbish relationships. I mean, I say relationships. I was 17 and 21. They were, you know, that kind of relationship. But both boys totally broke my heart. And I just couldn't cope with any more pain. I knew that I didn't want a heartache again. I didn't want anyone to leave me again and that kind of thing. And again, I didn't realize this until quite recently. I didn't fit all the pieces together of that's what was going on in my mind. I kind of knew it was happening, but I hadn't actually acknowledged it was happening, if you know what I mean. Until I was in my late 30s. And so then I very deliberately built up a wall around me so that people couldn't, so I couldn't get hurt. Which isn't ideal if you want to be in a relationship and you want children. But again, I spent my whole life like convincing people I was fine. I used to have counselling at my mum's hospice. I didn't remember having. I asked my sisters if I had it. And they were like, yeah, of course you did. But you convinced the counsellors that you were absolutely fine. Which wouldn't happen now, I don't think. Mm-hmm. But in the 90s, mental health wasn't so prevalent or talked about or wasn't at the forefront, you know, of people's minds. And so it just wouldn't happen now, I know. But yeah, so suddenly I was 35 and still single. And don't get me wrong, it's not like there were loads of men knocking at my door and I was shutting the door all the time going, no, you know, it's not like there was a trail of crying men behind me. I was also crap at dating, but I think I made myself quite deliberately crap. And I didn't instigate it, or I wouldn't go out on dates all the time or anything like that. And then, yeah, suddenly I'm 35 and single and desperate for a baby.
And do you think that, because I was reflecting on myself when I was thinking about wanting to become a mum, and I don't even remember ever a time when I questioned whether I wanted to become a mother. I was asking myself whether that's conditioning, that's a really overused word, but you know what I mean? It's just because or whether I really felt maternal instinct. I really don't know.
No, I was listening to a podcast the other day. Oh, I cannot remember who it was. Which is annoying. But she was saying that she knew that she didn't want children. She just assumed that by the time she was 30, that maternal instinct would kick in, and it did. But she didn't have that kind of yearning in her 20s, like, oh yeah, I'm going to have kids, you know. Whereas I, like you say, I don't remember a time where I didn't want to be a mum. I was my brothers and sisters are quite a bit older than me, so I was an auntie at the age of 12. And I've got 10 nieces and nephews, and you know, they've now starting to have kids and that kind of thing. So we're from a massive family. So there's just always been children. So it was never, I want kids. It was just an assumption that that's what would happen, that I would have children and that would be that. I'd have a husband, you know, I'd have a lovely, we'd go and do cool things, and then we'd have a nice honeymoon and a wedding and la, 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 la. And it just didn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, we can all relate to that idea of feeling like your years of fertility are
suddenly winding up. Going.
Because and really quickly, really, don't you think?
Yeah, but equally, I also don't subscribe to the notion that once you hit 35, your ovaries implode. Like, there is this kind of, you know, if you go to some fertility clinics, like, ooh, 35, well, and yeah, of course, statistically, it becomes less, but it's not impossible. That kind of fear and scaremongering that people do around fertility age is unforgivable, I think, quite a lot of the time, because it just terrifies people unnecessarily.
Yeah.
And that's not to say it isn't a fact. I know it's statistical fact, but equally, give people a chance. That's not going to help people get pregnant or, like, so it's just...
For you, the trigger was that kind of milestone birthday, or not milestone, but or that was you felt there was a shift then that, this was something that wasn't going to be something you just kind of mulled in your mind. This was going to be something you did. It was an action.
I had to, because
really
every year I kept going, oh, yeah, I'll do it next year. You know, of course I will. I'll do it next year. Isn't it funny? Just assuming knight in shining armor would knock up at my door and be like, hi, I'm Jim, we're getting married tomorrow. And I'd be like, cool, thanks. But obviously, and actually then I realized that I didn't idealize marriage anymore. It wasn't marriage I actually wanted. I always thought that was the first thing I wanted, because that's what you think about when you want to be a mom, you know, it's a partner, obviously. But then I realized that it was the being a mother that was the most prominent thing. So that's the route I went down.
And then what are the next step from there? Telling your nearest and dearest, and then what?
Yeah. So I decided to tell my family, because I knew that if it was a really bad idea, they would say, Liv, are you mad? You can't do this. Like, don't be daft. Because it is still quite an odd, I guess, decision. Or just not a decision you think you'd have to make. And so there are things that you would not think about that maybe your family would, you know. And so I was constantly just waiting for someone to go, not you, you can't do this, don't be ridiculous. But actually, once I said it out loud and my family had gone, absolutely, of course you should do this. You know, they didn't bat an eyelid.
Really?
No, they were amazing. Obviously they were just like, oh God, how is this going to happen? And, you know, practicalities, of course, because they didn't want, you know, because they care about me. But that not one of them said, you absolutely can't do this. I don't support you. And so as soon as I'd said it out loud and they were supporting me, I was like, oh God, I'm doing this. Like, you know, and that's when I decided to blog about it. Because again, then I knew I couldn't back out, because another Taurian trait is, you know, there is full bull in a china shop, but you will also back out pretty easily. And so, yeah, I started blogging about it because I hadn't found anyone that was like me that was talking about mm-hmm. it. It was all quite, sincere, I think is the word. There was no sort of brevity in it. There was no lightness. There was no, it was all very sincere and serious. And of course it is serious, but equally yes. I like to joke about sperm. That doesn't mean I don't think it's a serious matter.
No.
And I couldn't find anything like that I felt related, that I could relate to. So that's why I was like, I need to do this. But also for me to remember what had happened and how I'd felt and that kind of thing. So.
How do you even go about knowing how you go through the process? Where's your, other than Google?
It was Google.
Like, really?
And luckily I had just by fluke had a friend who's an embryologist. And so she was just like, ask me any questions. This is fine. Mm-hmm. I won't think you're stupid. And because I don't know, like, I still, when people say, where should I start? I'm still a bit like, Google, because fertility is so different for everybody. And it is the most privileged thing in the world for me to be able to afford to go and buy sperm because I wanted a baby. Like, I'll never. So there are 1,000 avenues you can go down. And depending on what your fertile health is like and depending on your monetary situation, depending on what country you live in, everything, there's caveats to everything. So I can't set, like, I wanted to be really clear about my book when we were doing PR and stuff for it, that it isn't a how to get pregnant, because I didn't know what I'm doing. If I went and did it now, I still wouldn't really know what I was doing, because it changes all the time. Mm-hmm. The legalities change, everything just changes all the time. And fertility is a bloody lottery, like whether you're doing it on your own or with your partner or accidentally at a nightclub loo or whatever, it's a frigging lottery. And there are no answers. And obviously all I knew that I needed was sperm. And so I was like,
they were trying to push you to go straight for IVF, but you didn't go straight for IVF.
So I did something called IUI, which is like entry level 101. They put sperm into your cervix. You can do it at home if you want to. I was never going to do that because I'd have thrown it off the wall. I would have screwed it up royally. And let me tell you, it's not cheap. So I was like, I need to go to a clinic and get them to do it. And it is literally like a smear test.
Really?
It's the same amount of time. It's exactly the same. You're in there for 3 minutes. It's not pleasant, but it's not unpleasant. Yeah. It's just, you know. Then there's IUI, where you have, you can have hormone medicine as well to sort of stimulate hormones so that you have more of a chance. And then there's IVF and all the forms of IVF, which is much more invasive, much more expensive, and much more successful because of that, you know, because it's very scientifically led. Whereas IUI is like
having sex
with that man. Yeah. And so the chances are really low. But also, I was just convinced that for me, I didn't think I had any fertility issues per se, so much as I was single. So I didn't particularly want to pump myself full of hormones if I didn't have to. Obviously, I would have done if it had come to that, but I wanted to start as if I was in a relationship and let's just see what happens. But of course, the fertility clinics didn't want me to do that because they're scientists, essentially. So they want results. They want good results. And so they very heavily pushed me towards IVF and kept sort of going, no, not IUI, not for you. You're overweight and you're old, you know, all of this kind of stuff. But I was quite, that was the only thing I knew about my fertility journey, bearing in mind I knew nothing, was that I wanted to start with just standard IUI. Yeah.
And I think everyone listening will be wondering how the picking the sperm donor process works.
So, again, this is all for me because everyone has such different experiences depending on what country they go to, where they get it from, what bank they get it from, blah, blah, blah. So for me, I had watched a documentary years before called The Vikings Are Coming about Danish sperm donors. So the only thing I knew about sperm donation was that in Denmark, they did it a lot. And so I went on Google, looked for the Danish sperm bank and checked that my clinic accepted it from that sperm bank, because again, some clinics won't accept it from some countries, from other clinics, from la la la. And then it's like a terrifying Tinder, or like it's, you put in what you want, even though like I didn't really have any, that's what it was like, I don't know how to narrow this down. I don't know what I want.
You want someone nice who's
relatively
healthy.
But that's the thing, is I was looking, initially, I was looking for someone I thought I would have fun with. Like, you know, because they have massive bios, like massive bios about their favourite colour, their favourite childhood memory, their dad's occupation, their granny's occupation, what their favourite music is. All, I mean, massive, massive bios. So you can't help initially but be like, he sounds really dull, don't want him, move on. And then after a while, I was just like, that really doesn't matter that he doesn't like the same music as me or he doesn't like dogs or whatever, because the chances are that's not going to be passed down through our DNA.
Yeah.
And so then I had to, but it took me quite a long time to realise that, actually, looking back. And then because my family is riddled with cancer and strokes and just badness, I realised that actually it was their familial genetic health that I needed to be looking at. And so that's what I did and just tried to go. And obviously these people are heavily screened, so they're not going to allow donors who have very bad medical history to be donors. And also health is a frigging lottery as well. So like, this is all very nice. Me going, I want a healthy one, please. Like, Jesus, what does that mean? But I literally had nowhere, I had no other basis to base
it
on. It was getting so overwhelming. I was so scared and so lonely and so overwhelmed by the whole thing, because it was such a big decision.
Yeah.
And I couldn't quite work out or get to grips with the fact that there was no right or wrong answer. Again, it's like that completion thing we were talking about earlier. Like, I couldn't go, oh, I want him, and someone would go, that's the right one. Well
done. Congratulations.
Yeah, well, congratulations, madam. You've picked the right one. It's still a lottery, and that was really daunting. But I was really thrilled once I found the donor. I was like, yeah, that's the right one.
Really?
Yeah. And I kept going back, and I was like, no, that is it. There was just something
that drew you to him.
That drew me. Yeah.
Are they all is it a universal price per donor? Or are they on a?
Oh no, it is. I mean, it honestly, so there are, you can get different amounts of sperm.
Yeah, straws.
It's called straws, which is the least pleasant
place. It's like a syringe one, is it?
For a receptacle of sperm. Like, they just shouldn't call it straw. Anything else, tub, whatever, just not straw. And you can get 5 mil you can get different amounts, and also you can get different motility, which is the kind of health of the sperm, the speed of the sperm. So that depends on the cost. Obviously, the higher the speed, the more cost. How many you want. If some countries you can have anonymous donors, so they can't be contacted. You can't in the UK anymore. I can't remember how long for, but quite a long time. You can't have anonymous donors, which is why we don't really do it in the UK. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the price it fluctuates from clinic to clinic, from country to country. But yeah.
In the book, you write about how you're deciding how many straws worth to buy, because it's both in terms of increasing your chances of success, but
yeah,
at that, weirdly for you at that point, you've got to consider whether you might ever want to try for siblings, and
yeah, and therefore, is that donor, will he still be available if I want siblings, or if those treatments didn't work, would that donor still be available then? And, or would I have to look for another donor again? And the thought of looking for another donor, if those vials that I'd bought ran out, And it costs, everything costs. So shipping costs, storage costs, admin costs. So it's a real, everywhere you turn, there's another fucking decision to make. Well, that there is no answer for, and it just feels wildly open. And I suspect that's the same again with all fertility, not just solo parenting, but all fertility. When you're in a clinic or it's got to that stage where there's medical intervention, there are no right answers. Anyone that tells you there are is talking absolute nonsense. And so you can't make any factual decisions
it's all chance. Isn't that exactly, are you learning early doors what early Google will not doors. Give you? People won't, you won't know, everyone can give you some advice, but you are ultimately accountable. Because in your book, you talk about, at the end of the day, I would have probably tried to gather my siblings or my friends around to try and help me choose a donor, because that's you do. But it is only you, and it's going to be your child.
It is only me, and also that is a big decision for them.
You know, of course. If they don't come on dates with you.
Exactly. And so it was really tough. It was much tougher than I anticipated, just because it was just an endless. And every time I thought I'd got to the end of the decision-making process, then they'd be like, do you want it delivered in nitrogen or superoxidated nitrogen or whatever it was, and just like, I don't know, how does, surely there is one way that sperm should travel. Book me on that flight.
And it comes in by UPS, which of course
comes via UPS, which I just assumed it wouldn't. I presumed it would come on some sort of gilded falcon. it has a tracking number like everything else. And it's just, yeah, there were just so many ridiculous moments that you're like, because actually it's just all admin. It's all just admin, but really important admin.
Yeah.
And now, an interlude to talk about today's sponsor, who I mentioned earlier, Hyde Park Winter Wonderland, who are returning this festive season from the 19th of November to the 3rd of January. As you know, I'm a big fan of honesty, and therefore it's only right that I tell you that I'm not wild about Christmas. I know that's controversial, but the pressure and the expectation of the occasion can sometimes really overwhelm and stress me out. However, actually, one of the few good things to come out of the pandemic is that last year I really figured out what makes me happy at Christmas. And that is a very, very low-key day. Just me, the fam, nowhere particular to go. Ideally some pyjamas and some delicious food. And as part of that, rather than overly focusing on the 25th of December being this unbelievable day, I'm all about doing a whole bunch of memorable things during the festive season. And if you're looking for a festive family day out, then Hyde Park Winter Wonderland delivers. They've got ice skating, they've got an ice slide, there's circus shows, games, bars, food, a Christmas market, and much, much more. You could say there's something for everyone, even for those amongst us who aren't particularly into Christmas. And one more very important thing, you do need to pre-book your entry ticket before visiting. You can't just turn up like in previous years. This helps control the crowd capacities and makes the event safe and fun and run as smoothly as possible. So head to hydeparkwinterwonderland.com to secure your tickets and find out more information.
How long does the whole process, how long did that process go, you know, from you deciding?
You can do it really, I mean, if you were quicker than me, you could do it really quickly. You could choose today and you could have the sperm here in 2 days' time. And then you just have to obviously wait for your body to ovulate, which again, I hadn't considered any of that. Like, I just wanted to go, like, come on, I've made it. And then just like, oh no, I have to wait for my body. Like, my mind is there, but I had to wait for my body to catch up. And that's another really stressful part of fertility, is you can't just keep going. You have to wait for your body to do its thing. You're not in control. Again, it's setting you up for parenting. Mm. You are not in control. There is sod all you can do, but wait and
you
ride it out.
You can't will it, can you? That's you can't will anything.
Nope.
It's a very disconcerting experience, all of that. And then you're pregnant.
And then I'm pregnant. Blah.
So
it took 4 goes to get pregnant. And the first 3 I did consecutively month after month. And then, and then it broke me. I realised mentally that I'd put it off for a long time, that how much it was affecting me. And I was like, no, I can't go through that again for a while. So I took 6 months off. And then did the last one and was like, well, this isn't going to work. But I'd said I'd do 4 before I tried IVF. So I'm going to do four, blah, blah. Oh, this isn't going to work. Why am I here again? La, la. And then lo and behold, that was the one that he was suddenly in there.
Mad.
And I was pregnant.
Mad.
Yeah, mad. Absolutely mad.
It's mad even when you've done it. It's mad. And then how is... Well, so many things I want to know. What are your biggest concerns at any point in the run up to it? What are the bits that you're questioning, or were you not? But once you made the decision, do you feel like you were fairly confident in that choice?
Yeah, I did. I always felt really confident. I never thought I'd made the wrong decision when I was in my right mind. But I was really poorly with my pregnancy. And so really tired. And I mean, like everyone, I wasn't any different to anybody, but it affected me much more than I thought. I just thought I'd be so thrilled that I was pregnant that I'd be like, oh yeah, hi, I'm Liv, I'm pregnant and life's brilliant. And actually I wanted to die. I wanted the baby to come out immediately. I wanted to stop feeling so ill. People going on about, oh, glowing. I didn't glow ever throughout my pregnancy. And so there were times in the middle of the night where I'd be crying on the floor, hugging the toilet, being sick, just thinking, what have I done? What have I done? But again, I don't think that was because I was a solo parent. I think I'd have been having that. I find it odd or hard to believe that anyone who hasn't had a kid before would ever go through pregnancy, whether you're a man or a woman, and not at some stage think, whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
What the hell have I signed up to? Can I do this? Is this cool? You know, and I just kept reminding myself that people do it all the time and they do it more than once. If it was that horrific or that destabilizing or that you couldn't do it, people wouldn't do it again.
Like, no, and I think in retrospect, I think you do reflect and think it's teaching you some important lessons, but it's,
isn't it just?
But also, I was talking to a friend about this the other day. Unfortunately, we're designed to have kids really when we're much younger. Often think that my early 20-year-old body would have breezed through it. I think with every pregnancy, the older I was, the more my body was like, really?
Yeah.
Are we doing this? Because I just haven't got the capacity.
And yet still in this country, we wildly vilify young mothers.
I know.
But I just find... extraordinary.
Like, it's insane. That
no matter what age you have a kid, depending on when you have it in that, what era you have it in, will depend on how people think about when you had your kid. So in the 60s, my mum had my brother when she was 17, no one batted an eyelid. Other than the fact that they weren't married. So of course they quickly trotted down the aisle and then everything was fine. As long as they were married, it was all going to be fine. But if my niece at 17 now got pregnant, everyone would be absolutely wildly horrified. Mm. And having a baby, I had Herb when I was just very nearly 39. Had that have happened at the time when my mum had a baby at 17, I would have been, I mean, they'd have probably put me in some kind of asylum for having a baby that late. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just the change and the shift in how people think about it. And when it's so personal and dependent on the health of that person or the, you know, it's just, I just find it wild.
Yeah.
Just general assumptions of when is the perfect time to have a baby. And absolutely, of course, the older your body gets, of course it's harder. So therefore, why don't we glorify it when they're younger?
Like, I agree.
So it doesn't make sense. This, I just find it really, it angers me for young mums.
Yeah, I agree. And actually, because I always told myself, well, you know, at least by the time I got to my mid-30s, my emotional maturity was, I would have said, was much more able to have a child.
Absolutely.
But actually, I wonder, there's other complexities, as we're talking about, that emotionally I'm picking in my 30s. In some ways, the slight naivety of my 20s might have made it brilliant.
I'd have been a cracking mum.
Yeah, I would have locked into it. I would have had the capacity. And then still gone on in my 30s and 40s, I'm not 40 yet, but to do this unpicking. And I wonder whether, I've just been asking myself whether what we think is the right answer.
There isn't one.
No, there isn't one. And you're right.
And that's the thing, there just isn't one. And women are vilified whether you have one at 17 or you have one at 42. Yet those two women are so different that had it been the other way around, it might not have worked. But so I don't know. I find it really complex and really odd how divisive it is and how much people care about what other people do. And that's what I'm just like, you know.
But the difficult thing, as we both referenced, I am only realising now how much I plugged into a version of what I thought my life should be.
And absolutely.
I'm constantly surprised at myself that...
Same.
That I was such a cliche, and you know, especially that school we went to where they, you know, growing the next generation of feminists. I just hook, line and sinker to all of it, and I'm not saying it's not right, but I definitely didn't go into it mindfully. I do it when I'm talking to my kids about the next chapter of their life. I try not to say, and then you'll have kids and then you'll get married, because
you
maybe
might
they will, maybe they won't.
Or maybe they won't want to.
Yeah.
You know, there's that thing. It's, I don't know. It's just really, well, it's just a never-ending shifting conversation, isn't it? And it is so different for everybody, and it will be different in 10 years' time.
Yeah.
You know, when Herb is 18. But look, if he gets someone pregnant, or if he gets pregnant or whatever at 18, all I want to do is make sure he's happy and support him. I'm not going to be like, dude, what are you doing? This is a huge mistake. Because actually, it just means they'll have more time to spend with their kids.
And I think that parenting is a slap around the face, or learning to parent at whatever age you do it. I really don't think you can prepare for it. Of course, the smart thing is to financially prepare, find someone ideally.
But when are you financially prepared for kids? Like,
no.
I am wildly privileged like that. And so I say this from my little nice house in Oxfordshire, you know. Mm-hmm. And still, I wasn't financially prepared for children. I had to sell my house in order to pay for childcare because I hadn't. Had I thought about it, I wouldn't have had a kid but you make it work. And that's me from a really privileged, nice life. Like, it's much tougher for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I mean, it's all just play. I don't know if I'm just having a breakdown because I'm about to turn 40. Will it all make sense on the other side of 40?
No, mate. Oh. Look at me. No, nothing makes sense ever. Sorry.
But I genuinely feel like it makes less sense with every.
Well, it's because we think about it more. That's the problem. Whereas when we were in our 20s, you'd just like, shit just happens. Yeah, I just drank, whereas now I can't.
No. If you could go back and have a word, well, I was going to say with pre-Herb you, what would you say? Would you give her some advice or would you say crack on as you are?
I would just say prepare for the first 3 months. It's brutal. I was so focused on getting pregnant that the realities that I must have ignored from all my friends. Yeah. I can't tell, like I say, I've got 10 nieces and nephews. I've got 7 godchildren. There were probably, I'd say 35, 40 children in my life all the time that have been there for years. I must have been doing some hardcore ignoring of what was happening to their mothers, because I didn't once realize how brutal that first step is when you've had the baby. And again, I don't think that's because I'm a solo parent. I think I'd just blocked it out because all I wanted was a baby. And like NCT classes and stuff just bore on about the birth, which is really bloody important, of course it is. And you need to prepare yourself and to have a good, informed, healthy birth where you can, where you know. But actually what I needed to know was what was going to happen in the 2 weeks after. And then the month after. And I would tell pre-Herb Liv, you'll get through it. It's brutal. You will get through it. And one day it will be the most fun you've ever had. You know, you've just got to ride the wave.
Yeah. I always think this though, because again, when I first had kids, I was like, why did no one tell me? And again, I had grown up with a lot of kids in my life and I was good with kids. And was it that we weren't listening? Was it, I think there's a lot in that people don't talk about their first 3 months because A, often it's quite traumatic to relive that for themselves.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
I was absolutely willing it to be all right again. Yeah. So I couldn't have uttered those words because I was the first of my friends to have kids. It's only when they're in it, I would say, this is really hard, isn't it? But
you're
trying to convince yourself it's all right.
And for me as well, I was always in my head needing to prove that the decision I'd made was the right one. Like, I wanted this on my own. I've got my baby. I'm loving it. Aren't I loving it? You know, I just love motherhood. And actually, after about 2 days of pretending to myself, I was like,
I'm having a horrible time.
This is awful. This is absolutely awful. And I had my two sisters living with me for 2 or 3 weeks, for the first 2 or 3 weeks. So I wasn't on my own or anything. And they've both got grown-up children. You know, they're professional mothers. And still, I was blindsided. The thought of doing it with a partner who was also blindsided, like actually being a solo parent, really worked to my favour at that time because my sisters were there looking after me 24 hours a day. It blew my mind. I'm just glad I acknowledged that I hated it.
I
was too tired to give a shit what other people were going to think about me saying I'm not okay. I didn't care if they thought that, if they had an opinion on whether I should have had a kid because I didn't feel okay right now. Because actually my body was in trauma. My mind was definitely in trauma. And that's okay. Of course it is.
Doesn't mean, like, you don't love Herb.
I
didn't understand.
Me neither.
I thought this and is a comment on how I feel about Bertie, and of course it wasn't in retrospect.
No, of course. And I didn't ever have that rush as well that I assumed so heavily I'd have, because that's what I longed for. I assumed as soon as he came out that, you know, the heavens would open and some birds would travel down with him and it would all be beautiful and there'd just be love hearts coming out of our eyes forever. And actually, I wanted him to be okay. I was glad he was there. But did I turn around and go to sleep? Yeah. You know?
I remember that.
Yeah. Because I couldn't move my body from below the waist, so I couldn't actually physically get him anyway. And for the first 3 weeks, yeah, like I say, I was thrilled he was there. I was super happy he was healthy, but I didn't have that kind of, oh, could you look at me? You know, I didn't have it.
I was devastated. Yeah, but I don't think I felt that till about 6 months. I really remember a moment when I sat and I looked at him and thought, oh my word, I love you. But that's because he was a person then.
Yes.
He wasn't just, there was interaction. I think maybe he was a bit younger than that, but not much.
No, my sister took Herb for a night at her house when he was, I want to say 3 weeks, might have been a bit older, might have been a bit less, because she wanted to spend some time with her family. So, and she was like, do you want me to take Herb? And I was like, yeah, sure. And she's like, are you sure? I was like, yeah, like he's lived with you all his mini life. He knows you as well as he knows me. Yep. And she was just like, okay. And so she took him for, I think it was 18 hours, of which I slept 14 of them. I felt unbelievable when he returned. I felt so good and rested and slept. And that's when I was like, I adore this kid. I'm so glad he's back. Yeah, so him going, actually, I totally get it. Like my niece has just had a baby and she doesn't like it if he's out of the room type thing. Whereas I'm the opposite. I'm just like, oh yeah, if you're happy, I'm happy. Mm-hmm. Take him. And him going that time, when I know loads of people will be like, what do you mean he was 3 weeks old and you let him go? I know, but for me, that is actually what saved us, entirely what saved us.
Really?
Was him going away and coming back and me being like, I hated him not being here. And so...
And then you get to have him forevermore.
And then now I'm like to my sister, please, do you want him again?
yeah. But that's, I think that's so healthy. I think it really is. You need to have pauses from them.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm trying to think of what a kind of good, profound way to try and wrap this up. But other than to say, I want to say well done to you, but then well done to every single parent. But
absolutely.
Well done for doing what felt right for you and for making it work.
Yeah, thank you. I'm thrilled I did it. It's been tough, but he's three now and they're really fun when they're three.
Oh, they're really fun.
they're
a really fun age. Yeah, Greta and him are similar age. Greta's just a bit older, but they're fun. They're people. That's the thing. And as that increasingly happens and they become more and more people, I was just like, oh, I really enjoy hanging out with you.
Yeah, you're a really good time. Yeah, Herb and I get on really well and we're really silly together and, you know, we like each other's company most of the time, which for a while there, I never thought was going to happen. So if anyone's listening to this who's looking at their kid, I remember when he was really young, like 3 months, and I used to look at my friends with three-year-olds just going, how old is he? Because I was like, I need to get to that stage because that looks like fun. And I just I really remember to everyone, like, how old's your baby? How old's that baby? How old are they? Because I just thought I need to get there. Mm-hmm. And actually, I didn't need to wait till he was three. It was about 3 months. But it does come. So if you listen to this and you're drowning a little bit, A, get help. Ask for help if you need help. B, it does come. One day they will sit and watch a whole film. And you can relax.
Yeah, the challenges change, but you're independent. I think I enjoy it more as we can be individual people. And when you're opting into it, you know, there's no two ways about it. The baby is, which I do love, you know, in retrospect, I do love a tiny, weeny human on you. It's a dream. But yeah, it becomes easier as an individual. And as they can communicate.
Yeah, it's the communication that's the game changer.
What's wrong with you? Oh, your tooth hurts. Right, we can fix that. Whereas that thing with the baby.
Rather than the low-level whinge when they can't talk. That was, I mean, lockdown would have been traumatic with when it was just me and him. If it was about 3 months earlier, he and I wouldn't have got out of lockdown alive because we were not getting on. Because he couldn't communicate. And so he was just cross all the time.
Yeah.
But thankfully, he started to communicate and was less cross. And then we got locked down together.
And you had an okay time. Well, none of us would have chosen it.
Okay, babe.
I'm hesitant to talk about it in retrospect. It does feel like we can talk about... I don't know what we... I'm not going to do it.
No.
So before we end...
Yeah.
Where, two things.
Yep.
Where can people find you and what do you want to shout about? And yeah, let's do that bit first.
So you can find me at Lives Alone on Instagram. And I've written a book called, guess what, Lives Alone. I wanted to call it Spunked, but my publisher wouldn't let me. So anyway, so yeah, Lives Alone book, Lives Alone Instagram. You can find me there.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant.
Thank you.
It's emotional and warm and funny and very human. So I really recommend
good. Thank
it.
Thank you.
And in the theme of the podcast, if you could have an honest conversation with one person, who would it be and what would you say?
Whoa.
Soz.
Dude. Oh my God. If I could have an honest conversation with one person, who would it be and what would I say? I guess it would have to be Herb when he's older, actually.
I love it. No one's done a future-facing one before.
I think, yeah, because I would want to, well, that's sort of why I wrote the book, so that I would remember all the feelings I had, so that he would know why, what I did to get him and why I did it. And I think that's what, I think that's who it would be. It would be Herb. It's always Herb.
It's always Herb. It's always them. Isn't it mad?
It's mad.
They're just like the core of your soul, but yeah. They're not, but then they're own people.
Don't think about it too much, Clemmy, you'll implode.
I had a really like classic bit of parenting this morning. So my three were having a bath and Woody, my middle, was about to get in and he took it upon himself to wee into the bath onto his siblings.
Brilliant.
My eldest is very emotional. He wept loudly. And Greta was going, I always wee in the bath every single time. It's like, no, people sometimes accidentally wee in the bath, but you don't wee into the
deliberately
bath.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
Yeah,
and I was just
yeah.
like, oh, great, this is going really well.
And then,
guys,
and that's
life lesson.
Just a standard Thursday morning.
They're all kind of clean, a bit wee, but
yeah, whatever. Sure. As long as flies don't stick to them, it's all good.
But yes, people do wee in the bath, but not intentionally. But also, he got the exact
reaction
outcome that he wanted. Yeah, it works. He played perfectly. I thought, this is your three personalities.
Yeah, and then off I
go to work. Anyhow, that's a total aside. Thank you so much for taking a while. It's been more than an hour because of the tech palavers. And I really, really, really hope that I get to meet you in real life.
I know. Imagine.
Soon.
One day.
When will that be?
God,
we should make that happen.
Yeah, we should.
But it's been an absolute joy.
Thank you so much.
I absolutely love that chat with Liv. Mainly because I got to talk to someone kind of, it felt like in real life and beyond just DM voice notes, which I normally do. But as I said during the episode, it's really got me thinking about the conversation we have about what parenting looks like, because as anyone who's done it knows, there is no magic formula. There is no perfect solution. I'm sure in an ideal world, two parents would be the approach that people want, but it isn't always that easy. And I would argue that going into it mindfully, having considered the financial implications, the logistics, the way that Liv must have done in order to get to that point that she went to the sperm bank, is probably leagues above what most of us do. So that's got to be a good starting point. As I said, her book is absolutely brilliant. I really can't recommend it enough. I'm absolutely flying through it. And it's a joy to read, but it is also very thought-provoking. So do get yourself a copy. It's called Lives Alone. And that's a wrap. Thank you very much for listening to But Why. So grateful to have you here. I say it so often, but I can't believe that getting to have these conversations is part of my job. Seriously, I learn so much from each and every one. Please do join me next week for another honest chat. And in the meantime, rate, review, subscribe, and tell your mates all about it. And if there's anything or anyone you'd like to hear me chat to, do drop me a line on butwhy@clemmytelford.com. And my battery is now on 3%, so this feels like the perfect time to wrap it up. Thank you very much. Thank you.